I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds. This is going to be episode number 234. And John, I'm just curious, do you live on Fear Street?
I do not. I think it's Washington Street.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award-winning podcaster. Check out his website, atfmb.com. Follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. Check out his writing over at Kirkus and SF Signal. My name is John Anilio. I'm a musician and a podcaster. You can check out music at my website, johnanilio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at John Anilio. And Patrick, how are things with you this week?
So far so good. You know, I think I have told you that they make me now play golf at work, which is very odd.
Yes. And you're not much of a golf enthusiast.
No, but I took my brother. And he enjoys golf, but he's never had his own clubs or anything. But I took him on a really cold day because it's been cold here in Colorado. Now, I was ridiculously comfortable. He was frozen the entire time.
Okay. Well, there you go.
There you go.
Well, that's how that works out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to have a little bit of a quick, we're continuing with the Pikes Peak interviews this week. And we're going to have a little bit of a shorter intro than we normally have. So we're going to get right on to the picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And I'll go first this week, and I'm going to pick Lords of the Sith by Paul S. Kemp. We've had Paul on the show before. He's written lots of different novels. He's written his own original stuff, the Edgel and Nix books, and he's written some Dungeons and Dragons stuff, I believe, too. And he's written quite a few Star Wars novels at this point as well. This is his most recent and the most recent Star Wars book. This is the fourth of the new canon novels, which I can sort of see Patrick internally cringing as I even mention that. I've read them all. I've read all four of the new Star Wars novels, and I liked them all, but I think this is the best one. This is all Vader and Palpatine. They crash land on a planet, and they're sort of hunted by a resistance group, and you just get to see Vader just be really badass. Like you really see the twirly Anakin stuff, like the acrobatic Anakin stuff. And Paul makes Vader pretty terrifying in this and makes him do some crazy things. And it's really cool in terms of like the relationship between Vader and Palpatine and like sort of the mistrust and he really gets into both of their. I think he did an awesome job with it because this is kind of a hard book to pull off, I think, because the main characters are villains. So it's hard to like, I think it's hard to do that. And he did a great job. And once again, I thought it ties in nicely with the Clone Wars cartoon too. There's some references and some characters from that show that kind of appear in this book. And if you like the Star Wars novels, you'll like this. If you don't like the Star Wars novels, then maybe it's not for you. And that's your thing. But I loved it. I love the Star Wars novels. And again, I think this is the best of the new canon novels. And that is Lords of the Sith by Paul S. Kemp. Patrick, what is your pick?
And I think it's interesting that they're tossing around the word resistance now. So apparently in the new movies, they're no longer the Rebel Alliance. They're now the Resistance.
That is probably purposeful in the books because you can tell that they're – and I don't know. I mean, I haven't talked to Paul about it other than like a back and forth on Twitter a bit. But I am sure he had like a Bible that he had to write for. He probably had a lot of leeway too. But I'm sure it was like, well, if you mention this, you have to say Resistance. And if you mention this, you know, because I think it is all trying to lead towards the new movies and all that kind of stuff too. But I love that they sort of tie the cartoons and stuff in. I mean, it's not that heavy handed or anything. It's just like if you're someone who's into all the stuff, it's like, I don't know. I like that kind of stuff. I like, you know, watching Daredevil and they make reference to the Battle of New York and you know, I don't know. I'm a dork for that stuff. So to me, I'm always, I mean, if it was too, you know, it has to be subtle, I think, for it to be effective. And it's subtle in the book. So
gotcha. So that's my, well, yeah. my pick this week is a very industrious fan went out and created a alternate Batman versus Superman trailer. And this particular one is animated. It's the Bruce Timm Batman series and the Superman animated series, and has put together this trailer and used audio clips from the various series, you know, to put it all together and made this Batman versus Superman trailer, animated trailer. And I thought it was really, really cool, really well done.
You see those sometimes, you're like, why can't they make that movie?
Right, yeah.
You're like, that's what I want to see.
Well, yeah, there was that great short film. It was like 11 minutes or something, that was a Wonder Woman short film that was just amazing. And you're going, yeah, make that movie.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly.
Those cool. are my picks.
Awesome, awesome. All right, Patrick, who do we have on the show this week?
Well, John, years ago, you and I used to joke about trying to get the bigger guest. Mm-hmm. And you remember you had like gotten someone, and then I sent an email to Mike Resnick and got him, and you were like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah, you hit a home run, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So this week I have not one, but two New York Times bestselling authors. One of them is quite, if I'm not mistaken, is the best-selling children's author in history.
He's got a lot of books.
350 million books. And that's R.L. Stein. And he is bringing back Goosebumps, and he's bringing back Fear Street. They're making a movie about him that's going to star Jack Black as R.L. Stein.
Awesome.
And I got to talk with him at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. And then they double booked me with another keynote, because R.L. Stein was one of the keynotes. The other keynote was Mary Kay Andrews. And she is also a New York Times bestselling author, and she has written a ton of stuff. And she also writes under Kathy Hogan Trocheck, is her other name. And she has a ton of books out there, thrillers, some romance, all kinds of stuff. And they had never met before. And then we sat down, and I did like this double interview with them, and it was kind of like, just let them talk.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. So much fun. They played off each other. R.L. Stein is so incredibly funny. And he'll tell you that he's doing this because he really wanted to be a funny guy. He wanted to be the guy that made you laugh. He did Bananas and Dynamite in the 70s. Do you remember those magazines?
No.
So he did those magazines in the 70s. Bananas was his. Dynamite was his wife's, I think. But he would write for those. And so he wanted to be the funny guy, and he wrote joke books and all this other kind of stuff. But then the scary stuff started selling and selling like gangbusters. And for the first time, he said ever, the children's market was that girls read and boys didn't. Mm-hmm. And he was the first one that had 50-50. Girls and boys were reading his stuff. And I don't know, we've mentioned before that you teach. Do they still give out the little Scholastic order form thing with all the books on it, and you go through and you check? I used to get that all the damn time, and I loved that thing. It was like Christmas.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what started him, was the Scholastic thing. And so they found out that he had all these kids, you know, reading his stuff, 350 million books. And he talks a little bit about some of the fan mail he's gotten. He talks about all kinds of stuff. Mary Kay Andrews talks about stuff. It's a great, great thing. So I was really jazzed to be able to bring that to Functional Nerds.
Awesome. All right, everybody, enjoy.
I am sitting here at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference 2015, and I have two very special guests. You're both keynotes, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
So I have R.L. Stein and Mary Kay Andrews, and I think everybody listening is going to know who you are, sir, just because Goosebumps.
Because I'm so old, and I've been around so long. Yes.
I don't know that that's true.
Yes.
But your books have just been around forever, and I know they informed a lot of my contemporaries and people that I grew up with. I remember great. The shows and stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the 23rd year of Goosebumps.
That's incredible.
Can you believe that? That's 23 incredible. Years of writing that stuff.
That's awesome.
That's why I look like this. All those books.
And Mary Kay Andrews is the author of the New York bestselling Save the Date
Yes.
Ladies Night, mm-hmm. Spring Fever, Summer Rental, The Fixer Upper, Savannah Breeze, and Blue Christmas.
Yes.
Wow. Are those all New York Times bestsellers?
I think they are. I think they are, yeah.
And you're younger than both of us.
I don't think so. I just happen to have access to good hair coloring.
So do I.
And you're both keynotes here. What's involved with being a keynote? Do you know?
I don't know. I just talk about myself.
Yeah.
I only have one subject. So people say, oh, what are you going to speak about? And I just have my one subject.
And what's the one subject?
Me.
You?
Yeah. I just talk about myself incessantly.
Yeah.
So it's really obnoxious.
Wow. Damn it. I was going to talk about you tonight. That really ruins my talk.
I'm disappointed. I won't hear it.
So do you have, I think every keynote has to like give a speech during like a dinner?
Yes.
So when is yours?
Tomorrow night.
And yours?
And I'm tonight.
You're tonight. Yes. You already have it written?
I do.
Ready to go? Did you polish it?
I polished.
Did you send it to an editor?
No.
Try to get it published?
No.
No. Okay.
No. No. If I sent it to the editor, they would cut it and they wouldn't pay me anyway, so... It's just me.
An editor for me would say, I've heard all these jokes before.
Yeah,
Don't you have anything new?
Mm-hmm.
So
there are people actually who can do my act, who've heard my talk. It's sad.
And they can do the Stein shtick, which is hard to say.
Yes,
Stein shtick.
Yeah, I know. Harlan Coben said to me, he was doing my letters from kids.
Yeah?
Yeah, he knew them all by heart. He'd heard them so often.
Do you get a lot of letters from kids?
Yeah, luckily.
Yeah.
Very nice. It's one of the nicest parts of, doing this is the incredible fan mail from kids. That's why I like a kid audience. They write to you. They have time. Kids write.
And they don't pick apart your grammar.
They don't. They look for mistakes. They love finding mistakes.
Right. Everybody does.
And the letters are wonderful. I got a letter last week from a girl that said, Dear R.L. Stein, you are my second favorite author. That was the whole letter. That was it. Talk about suspense, right?
So you don't know who the first?
No idea.
No clue.
No idea.
Wow.
The mail is really terrific.
So that's interesting. Do you get fan mail?
I do. Yeah? I do. You know, I hear from people who tell me, they love to point out errors, and they love to gripe about dropping the F-bomb, which I like to do in my books, or bad language, or taking the Lord's name in vain.
Apparently, I always tell people to watch their goddamn language on the podcast. So.
Yeah. No, it's nice. You get letters from people who tell you that I write books that are funny. They're bright, fluffy beach books. That's all they are. I'm not curing cancer. I can't make the Republicans and the Democrats agree on anything.
No one can.
No. But they tell me, I my books helped them through a hard time. They went through a divorce or they lost a spouse or, an aging parent was in a nursing home. And I had a lady who said, one lady said, I took you with me to the nursing home. I didn't want to go, but my family felt it would be better. And that book made me laugh and it made me feel like, okay, I can be okay in this new place. And what's better than that?
What do the kids say?
They don't say that. Now, a lot of my readers are grown up. All the 90s kids who read Goosebumps and Fear Street, they're all in their 20s. They're all your age.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
I'm
all,
older than 20.
What?
I'm older.
They're in their 30s. And I'm on Twitter all day. It's a great distraction.
Yeah, Facebook for
me. Keeps me, yeah. Twitter's
I write too
me.
Long to do well on Twitter. I need it.
I'm very concise. I'm a children's author.
That's right.
I'm little, short.
Maybe you could train
short.
Me.
And it's very, very good for my ego because all day long I hear from my original readers. That's why I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to keep in touch with my original audience.
You're just trolling for praise.
Yes, mainly.
Okay.
I wouldn't be a librarian today if it wasn't for you. I wouldn't be a writer today. Mm-hmm. I hear this all day long.
Yeah.
Thank you for getting me through a hard childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, my wife has to keep me humble after all that. That's her job, is to keep me humble.
Do they ever say, now that I'm grown up, I'm sharing these books with my kids?
Yes, I hear that a lot.
That's awesome.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It takes a little while to get used to that.
Well,
because these older readers, when I am to them, I'm nostalgia.
Ah.
And it's a little weird.
Yeah.
It's a little weird to be nostalgia. That took a little adjusting, but I love it now.
But
and it's great to be able to scare different generations.
Sure. But and I was going to say, but sometimes with nostalgia, it doesn't, it kind of fades and it doesn't keep up with what you remembered. Mm-hmm. I was just telling Kevin Eikenberry this earlier. The Dukes of Hazzard. I grew up watching The Dukes of Hazzard. It was the greatest show on television. I loved it. I tried to watch an episode a couple of years ago. Yeah. I couldn't. I was like, I'm not this audience anymore.
Yeah, I have a. Yeah. It's funny. I have a Duke of Hazzard's thread in my new book, Beachtown, that comes out next month. The character's father was a Hollywood stunt driver, and he actually drove.
The General Lee?
He drove the General Lee, and he actually has a General Lee because, you know, they use so many of them. They crash so many. So I don't know about the research you do, but I find myself alone one night, you know, trolling the internet looking for trivia about the Dukes of Hazzard and the General Lee. What it looked like, how many of them they had.
Right.
Have you ever seen a medical alert bracelet that people wear? That typically has like the things you're allergic to and stuff.
Yeah.
There's one for writers, and when you look at it, it says "Clear my browser cache."
Yeah,
that's very good. I actually never heard that. That's very good.
Well, I thought so. I have my own shtick too. So,
John Schneider from Dukes of Hazzard once did a wonderful thing for me. I was at a TV critics. The TV critics get together in Pasadena every year. And we were introducing a new Saturday morning show called The Nightmare Room. And he was there to, they were starting the Superboy show that ran for years.
With Dean Cain? The other one.
Tool.
Yes.
Yeah, that I forget the title of it. And I was telling him about my first time before the TV critics, which was one of my worst performances. I had a horrible time, and I told this story to the TV critics. It just bombed. It was awful. And as I walked off, having totally bombed in front of these people, I tripped just to make it, you know, a perfect day.
Right.
And I was sitting in, this was a couple years later, and I was telling John Schneider the story about how I tripped and it was terrible. And then he went out with the cast of the Superboy show, and they talked. And as John walked off at the end, he tripped. Just for me.
Nice.
Isn't that a nice story?
That's very awesome. Generous.
Show was Smallville.
Smallville.
Yes.
Yeah.
Smallville.
Smallville.
His show ran for years. Mine ran 13 episodes.
That was it. Well, so. But he didn't get to be on it for the whole thing because he was Jonathan Kent.
Yes.
So the whole Superboy story is, you know, Dad's got to die eventually.
Right. Right. Anyway, I thought that was nice of
him. That's very nice of him. You have another keynote. Shawna McGuire, have you met her, either of you?
No, she was sitting at a table near mine today. That's as close as I've come.
Okay, how about you?
I haven't met her yet.
Okay, so I did a pre-interview with her before the conference, and I just have to warn you, she's planning on keeping you from sleeping by being outside your room with a chainsaw and making noises because she said she grew up not being able to sleep because of you.
That's fair.
No, it's totally not fair because I know you're down the hall from me. So.
She's like, Arl Stein's going to be there, and he kept me from sleeping, so I'm going to keep him from sleeping.
No. I get some people on Twitter say, will you pay my shrink bills?
So what made you want to be a writer? I mean, what got you into this? Because I know it was probably for the money, the fame, the glory.
The Maserati, yeah. The diamonds. I was an early reader. I was reading before first grade, and I guess something in it, something about that reading early made me want to tell stories. And I remember the first books I loved were Dr. Seuss.
Okay.
And I loved the playfulness of the language. I loved the way he made me laugh. I loved the drawings and... I can't remember a time when I didn't want to write. So I went to journalism school and was a newspaper reporter and then tunneled out to do fiction.
Interesting.
And now I'm driving a Maserati encrusted with diamonds.
There you go.
You're so lucky.
I know. You should get yourself one.
You should, you know.
Definitely.
Or two.
Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. How about you?
What about me?
Did you see some kids playing on your lawn one day and think, I want to get rid of those kids, so I'm going to write some scary stories?
No, I never wanted to be scary. I never.
Never?
I started writing when I was 9. There was this weird kid in my room typing. I found a typewriter up in the attic, dragged it down, typing funny stories.
Electric
funny
or manual?
Story, joke books. What?
Electric or manual?
No, it was a manual.
All right.
And I always just wanted to be funny. I never planned to be scary, ever. And I was just this weird kid. I was very shy and very fearful. And I would just, you know, I loved being in my room typing these stories. And then I would bring them into school. I'd do little joke magazines, bring them into school and pass them around. And people always ask me, did teachers encourage you? Did your teachers encourage you to be a writer? And I have to say, well, they begged me to stop. Because they'd say, Bob, please don't bring these things to school. Please, Bob, don't stop doing these.
I used to get notes that said, Kathleen is an oversharer, which in the parlance of the South means you can't shut up.
Yeah.
That's good. Bless your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She overshares. She shares with her, which right. She visits with her neighbors, which means she sits in the back of the class and cuts up.
Mm-hmm.
How long from the time you wrote your first novel till you sold it?
Well, the first one didn't sell. The first one is in a box somewhere. I wrote the first one, started the second one, and that one right away, and that one sold based on 5 chapters.
Wow. Was it like fast sell, or did it take 2 years?
No, it was a pretty fast sale. But, you know, I've been a newspaper reporter for 14 years, and so that I thought I was failing as a journalist, and it turned out I just had a long internship as a novelist.
There you go. And did the newspaper inform your writing? I mean, were you on the crime beat and seeing all this weird stuff going on, and that made you want to write some stories? Or
I had been on the crime beat. I was a feature writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution by the time I left journalism. But no, I really didn't think I'd have a fiction career. I just wanted out of newspapers, and it seemed like if I could write fiction, I could do that and be home with my kids and help pay some bills. So I didn't have a grand scheme, but yeah, the discipline of writing for a newspaper definitely has informed all of my career, because if an editor says to you, I need this rewritten, and this is what happened with my last book, I got my editor's notes for revision, and they were due back, the revisions were due back in 24 hours.
So you got the discipline of button chair typing.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I'm late on deadline and all those things. I do all the things they tell you not to do, but I know that you can't wait for inspiration to strike. You have to, you know, knock it over the head and drag it back to your lair.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I started out in magazines.
Right.
So you learn to write really fast.
Yes. And
you're
to length.
You're planning one issue, you're writing one issue, you're throwing out the new one that just came out, you're on. And it was very good training.
Yeah.
My very first job in New York was making up interviews with the stars for this woman who had 6 movie magazines that she had to fill every month. She did 6 magazines. And I would come in, there were 3 of us. I would come in the morning. She'd say, do an interview with Diana Ross. And I'd sit down, type, 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 make up an interview with Diana Ross. Do an interview with the Beatles. Okay, type, 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 write, interview, and I have to do 3 or 4 a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is fabulous, creative, great training.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's button chair writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which I was just telling someone, I said, that, you know, a lot of the advice that you get at one of these things is it boils down to sit your butt in the chair and write.
Yeah.
And how many times do you need someone to tell you that?
Right.
Depends on the person. By the way, I also started with a manual typewriter.
Yes.
And I remember hitting it and nothing showing up on the page. Uh-huh. And I hit it again and nothing. I mean, the time went up.
You need an ink ribbon.
I needed to push it harder.
Oh.
So I learned to kind of go thump, 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 thump.
I don't know how we ever wrote books on a typewriter. I wrote maybe 100 books on a typewriter.
I started.
How did we ever revise?
My first purchase after I left newspapers, and it was a big one, was my own IBM Selectric.
Yeah.
And I can remember, you know, I worked in newsrooms up until 91, and they computerized the Atlanta paper sometime in the mid to late 80s. And I can remember telling them they couldn't have my Selectric because I didn't trust a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they left me mine. And I think I was addicted to the the music of the fingers on the keyboard and the rhythmic slapping of the return carriage. And if you've grown up on that, it's kind of mesmerizing. And I like the sound that my keyboard on my laptop makes when I make it, you know, when it clacks fast.
I type with only one finger. So I don't have that.
Which one?
I don't have that melody.
To go to
you know, I started when I was 9. I never learned how to type.
Well,
I'm totally left-handed.
Yeah.
I only use one hand, not even two. I don't even use two fingers. And I've written 300 books with this finger.
Wow.
You can look, it's bent.
So it's what we would call gnarly.
This is, this is what I sacrifice for my art. This finger, it's totally arthritic now. I can't even use it.
Yeah, for journalism school, when I went to journalism school, to graduate, you had to take a typing test. And, of course, the guys would hire a cute sorority girl to take their typing test so they could then graduate and get a job where they could get another cute girl to do their work.
Right.
Oh, well, luckily times have changed
a
little bit. You were talking about writing books on typewriters. And so, I mean, when you started, it was you had to print everything out, you type it out, send it off, mail it off, wait, back and forth, back and forth.
Correction fluid, carbon paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Did you make copies of it when you were typing, or did you just keep the one copy?
No, you know, I have these universities who ask me for my archive, and I have no archive. I don't save anything. I live in an apartment.
Yeah.
I don't have any room. And they say, well, we could have your old manuscripts. And, well, I don't have any. I have no archive. I have nothing. I don't have anything to show anyone. And now, of course, you don't even print out the manuscripts.
Right.
We never print them.
Right. Yeah, you email everything.
Yeah. And I don't have letters to give some university. It's all email.
Now,
and it's gone. There's nothing.
Isn't that interesting?
Just one gnarly finger.
Just a finger, that's it.
Maybe
that's
they could plaster cast that. Like and like instead of the life mask.
Kinda, that's kind of sick.
Yeah. Well.
Just the index finger on your left hand. Yikes. So obviously you're still producing, you're still writing, you're still pushing stuff out there. Right? I mean, neither one of you is stopping. You're
Some
driven by this.
Some of us just don't know when to quit.
Right? So what keeps driving
I'm still
driving
doing
you?
Goosebumps, and I restarted my Fear Street series, which I didn't do for 20 years. We started it up again. I'm killing teenagers again, which is a lot of fun.
They need it more than
Everyone
ever.
Everyone enjoys that.
Yeah.
And I'm doing 6 new Fear Street books.
Wow.
The newest one is called Don't Stay Up Late.
Well, we talked about what got you started, but what keeps you going, I guess is what I'm at. What keeps you writing?
I just love
and doing?
It. I wouldn't know what else to do all day.
Yeah.
For one thing. But I still love it. I look forward to it. It hasn't gotten easier.
No, it gets
especially
harder.
Since I've done every scary story you can possibly do. I've done everything. So it's like it's kind of a nice puzzle. It's much more of a challenge to be able to think of new scares and new chapter endings and new ways to get people in terror. It's really fun for me. I still love it.
Yeah, I don't play tennis or golf. I don't play bridge. I love spending time with my family. But I think once you're a writer, when you don't write, I tell people I get constipated with story. I'll think to myself, oh, I've got 3 months off. I don't have to. That time never happens.
Well, how long can you go without writing?
I have gone maybe 2 or 3 weeks on a book tour. But during that time, too, you know, the new story, the next story is marinating. You're, you know, running ideas by your editor or
Someone or once asked me, how long can you go?
Right.
And I said, 10 days maybe I can go.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 weeks if I'm on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
He said, it's an addiction.
I think it's just
an addiction.
It's part of, I don't want my work to define me as a person, but it kind of does. Mm-hmm. I mean, what else would I tell people? What else at cocktail parties? What do? Well, I used to write, but, now I wander lost. I don't know what I would say.
Right.
Wander lost is pretty good.
Yeah.
I've got a good reaction.
I meander.
Well, I have seen certain authors at conferences like this one who do workshops and panels. Like, they're the ones teaching them. And then when they have free time, you'll see them off in a corner somewhere writing. Can you take a break when you're at one of these, or do you also have to like go up to your room for a minute and write down an idea? Or
no, I take a break.
Yeah, I take a break. I go to the other sessions. I just told Bob I want to go to his wife Jane's session. This is a good time for me to remind myself of why I do what I do, and also to try to learn some new stuff, to learn some new tricks.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talk about how you started, what keeps you going. I'm also thinking about, again, when we talk about the typewriters and when kind of this all started for you, especially for Mr. Stein. Everything has changed now. It's all ebooks and there's fewer bookstores and there's indie bookstores and Borders is gone and there's Barnes & Noble. And how is that affecting your careers? I mean, is it harder for you to sell a book now, or...
I think it's harder for everybody, but when I started, I'm very optimistic about reading and about books. When I started, children's publishing was like a tiny part of publishing houses.
Yeah.
And it was like nothing, four people in a corner. And there weren't that many books. Now it's billions of dollars, children's publishing. Billions. And it's the cash cow for many of the large publishing companies. Mm-hmm. So somebody is reading children's books.
Yeah.
Last year, sales of children's books are up 12%.
Wow.
For the year. So that's very encouraging. People who say, "Oh, kids don't read anymore," I don't believe that at all. I think kids are reading a lot.
Well, I was the kid that was ridiculously excited when the order form came in. Your little Scholastic mm-hmm. order form, and it was like Christmas.
Yeah,
I would go.
I loved
that.
It too. And I was a kid; we had it.
Oh,
and then
we
worked there.
I circled all the ones I wanted, and I checked them and everything. And I took them home. My mom's like, "You can't have all of those. You got to dwindle it down. Come on!" And it's like, "No, I want all of these."
Yeah, my mother said, "You can't have any of those. There's five kids in this family. I'll take you to the bookmobile."
Uh-huh. My listeners know I've always had issues with bookmobiles and libraries because I want to own the book.
Yeah.
I want it to be mine.
Oh, I wanted to own it too. My mother just didn't have my parents didn't have the wherewithal. So sure. Libraries were a great resource for me.
And they still are.
Oh, yeah.
They still are. Yeah. And we have some great libraries here in Colorado. My critique group meets at one.
That's great.
Once a month. But I will say that there's a lot of DVDs in that library, though.
I think there's room for everything.
Right.
I hope there is.
Well, what do you think about the ebooks and everything changing? Is it harder or easier?
It's harder for everybody, I think, because the audience, you have to hook them faster. Mm-hmm. You can't have pages and pages of internal monologues anymore, if you ever could do that. So there's so many distractions. You've got distracted readers. And so you have to hook them from the very beginning and keep them along for the ride, which, hopefully you need to do that for fiction anyway. But I find if I look back on some of the mysteries I wrote when I started my career, I can see an editor slashing them now and saying, don't need that, don't need that, don't need that, internal monologue, talking to yourself, I can remember mystery people would say, well, you have to find the body within the first 100 pages. And then it was like, okay, no, 50 pages. Now, if you don't have a body by page 10, maybe, you lose the reader.
Wow.
And the same thing with, I write women's fiction now, so you better bring on somebody who's going to be a love interest pretty quickly.
So, but how does that affect your ability to tell the story? Because now what you used to do is you would build the tension a little bit and you'd come to, almost like a climax and you'd be having the roller coaster mm-hmm. of emotion. Now you're kind of having to do that very, very quickly. It's almost like writing
and
a short story.
It means you write better stories.
Sure. The story is still there. You just need to be able to telegraph it to the reader in a more effective way. And that can be harder. That can be a lot harder.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because it's not like writing long epics. You're basically boiling it down to haiku. And haiku has its value, too.
Right.
Very cool. So I asked you about your keynote. Do you have your keynote ready to go?
It's speech number 3.
Speech number 3?
Yeah.
How to be a writer?
No,
choose your own adventure.
As I say, I only have one subject. I just talk about me. So mm-hmm. it'll be anecdotes about me.
And I'm talking about what you learn from failure.
Yes. Yeah. Mine's really about how surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Surprises along the way.
The overall narrative of this particular conference is Choose Your Own Adventures. Is that kind of woven into your keynotes?
Having written about 100 Choose Your Own Adventure books, I'm kind of with this theme. I went like 3 years without ever writing a book with a beginning, middle, and end.
Oh, my gosh.
Every book had about mm-hmm. 20 endings.
Wow.
They were fun to write.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
They were fun. They were a nice puzzle to write. Mm-hmm. But
I didn't keep with a theme. I just wrote what I wanted to write.
Okay.
Which was, I saw J.K. Rowling on the Today Show talking about how what we don't talk about with writers today enough is failure. And I thought, and that resonated with me. Because we don't talk about it enough.
Yeah. And you mean that to expect it or to be prepared for it?
That it's not always a bad thing, that there are things that can come out of failure, and that, yes, inevitably there will be some failure.
I heard someone say something along the lines of, you only fail if you quit.
Valid.
Well, that's one way of thinking about
mm-hmm.
it. I'm in the International Thriller Writers, and we all meet in New York every summer. 450 thriller writers in one room. It's great.
All of you jumping out of dark corners at each other.
All these pasty-faced people who never see the sun, you know, writing. And it's a wonderful group. And we have the Thriller Awards every year, a big banquet. And they put on the screen during the award dinner really bad reviews that people got. And that, you know, just failure.
Yeah.
And they're wonderful. Just horrible reviews. Everyone sends in, all the big writers send mm-hmm. in all the worst reviews they ever got. It's very entertaining.
I've actually talked to a lot of writers who say the 4 and 5 star reviews I don't pay attention to. I always look at the 1 stars.
Yeah. Here's my best Amazon review. This is the best Amazon review I ever got. 5 stars. The package arrived in very good shape, and it was very easy to open.
You can't ask for more.
5 stars.
You know what? You can't ask for more than that from fiction, that it's easy to open, that it's timely.
It arrived, that's right.
It's accessible and timely. That's what it boils down to. Right.
That's awesome. Well, I'm actually running out of time. So, Mary Kay, do you have a website?
I do, marykayandrews.com.
Mm-hmm. Do you do social media?
I do. I'm on Facebook a lot. I don't tweet as Bob does because I write too long to tweet.
I understand.
And I Instagram. I take pictures of stuff I like.
Oh, very cool. And so I encourage people to come and check
absolutely,
it out on Facebook.
Absolutely. Okay. And buy my new book, Beach Town.
There you go. Bob?
Yeah, I have rlstein.com. Mm-hmm. It has a complete list of all Goosebumps and Fear Street books.
Wow.
It has a nice checklist on it. And many other things. And games and comics and all kinds of stuff.
Very cool.
And news about my newest books. And the new Fear Street book is called Don't Stay Up Late. And what's the new Goosebumps book? Nightmare on Clown Street. I keep going.
What is it about clowns?
I don't know. You know, I don't understand. I can't tell you how many people tell me they're afraid of clowns. Yeah. Oh, I'm scared of clowns. I know clowns. I'm very close with the Big Apple Circus in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a few friends who are clowns, and they're the nicest people on earth. They're so sweet. They're wonderful people. And everyone says, oh, I'm terrified of clowns. I don't really get it. I write about it, but I don't really get it.
I grew up... Half the time was in Chicago, so on WGN Channel 9, we had Bozo the Clown.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with Bozo the Clown.
Yeah, right.
You know?
What's scary about that?
None. There's nothing scary about
I don't know. My
Bozo.
Son is still he's 28, and he still freaks at the sight of a clown.
I don't get it. There's the picture that makes its rounds. It's the clown in the dark area with the little sign that says free hugs,
mm-hmm.
but it's all very dark and, you know, foreboding and everything.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Well,
I think John Gacy has a lot to answer for.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Stephen King, too.
Yeah. Stephen King it, and It, yeah.
It, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ed Gacy.
It was one of those books that I started reading it, and I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was a bartender. She would tell all the people that came in the bar about her son who liked to read, so they would bring in their little paperbacks that they'd finished. and give them to her, and she'd bring them home to me, and one day she brought me it. And mom being mom, she didn't vet it.
How old were you?
I was probably 11.
Uh-huh. A little young.
And we didn't have a shower at the time. We had a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sit in the bathtub, and I would grab a book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're familiar with it, in the very beginning, there's a guy sitting in a bathtub. And then you're a kid, and you're reading this, and you're sitting in a bathtub. And then something really bad happens to the guy in the bathtub, and then you don't want to read it anymore.
Right.
At all.
Right. Right.
It freaked me out. Well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners
Patrick,
before I let you
this
go?
Was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
good. I really enjoyed talking with you.
I'm glad.
That's great.
Thanks for coming on.
And we're back. Well, hope you enjoyed that interview. Patrick, great job.
Thank you.
For me this week, just check out johnanilio.com. I have some new music over there, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have this week?
Oh, the usual stuff. Kirkus Reviews, SF Signal. I'm on Twitter as ATFMB. I'm on Facebook as ATFMB. And, you know, just having fun as usual, writing like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good, man. All right, everybody. We will see you next time. Have a great week.
So,
I just want to tell you.
Sure.
We were in Bath, Maine. And there was a barbecue place,
mm-hmm.
which had the best southern barbecue
nice.
I ever had in my life in Maine. Most people don't go to Maine for barbecue.
No, they go to Maine for seafood. Yeah.
And it was incredible.
Hmm? Was there sauce?
It was Memphis style.
Was there sauce?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the problem.
Bath, Maine. It's amazing.
You get stuff everywhere.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?